You're listening to Rethink Northwest with John Roschke and Andrew Bond.
Hi, and welcome to Rethink Northwest, a renewable energy podcast. I'm John Roschke, and I'm with Oregonians for Renewable Energy Progress. OREP is a nonprofit that's citizen-driven and grassroots movement to raise awareness and better education for renewable energy in the state of Oregon and beyond. We focus on better policies and better education to bring all of Oregonians up to speed, including the policymakers, the industry members, the nonprofit world, and the general public, better understand renewable energy in our state. I'm here with Andrew Long. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, and I'm Andrew Long, a member of the GP General Public, here to take things from a layman's perspective and question John, who's in the industry, closely about the implications of renewable energy and renewable energy policy for the average American, be it a homeowner or renter like myself.
Yeah, and I've been working in the renewable energy industry in Oregon for about 4 years now. I worked with a wind turbine manufacturer, and I've consulted for installers for wind and solar projects, generally on the smaller and community scale levels. And now I'm the OREP education and outreach addict, I like to say. I just keep at it because problem's not going away. We certainly need a new solution in our society and in our economy. And I certainly, for one, believe that renewable energy could hold the answers to a lot of our problems that we've been experiencing the last few years.
Yeah, renewable energy could be a big shot in the arm for our economic woes, employment and revenue for the government, revenue for the people. So in addition to being a very conservative answer, G.
Yeah, and we like to focus not just on the environmental benefits. We all certainly know that climate change is becoming more and more part of our day-to-day life in this century. But aside from that, it's really about the economic impacts that renewables could have. How can we make this something that can really revitalize our economy and really rethink the way that we've structured our energy infrastructure in this country and in this region?
Yeah, and let's think about being a competitive nation, a competitive region, a competitive nation for the rest of the century.
Yeah,
it's key.
The U.S. has always been considered a global leader in a lot of things, but the truth of the matter is we're falling behind in renewable energy. We're losing out on manufacturing. We're losing out on installations. We've got the population, and if we could just get a better policy in place, we could really take off and take off quickly. But we're quickly losing out to China, and India are overtaking us. And certainly Germany, the world leader, has set a standard that I'd love to see Oregon meet.
Agreed. So really quick recap. On our last show, we covered a couple things. It was kind of an introductory show. You don't need to have listened to it. We talked a little bit about renewable energy.
No, you should have listened to it.
You should have listened. Okay, John says go back and listen to it. But we talked about the technology being ready, the fact that solar's ready, wind is ready, these technologies are mature enough to be used on a large scale. We talked about the distributed generation model, and this is sometimes a point of, it needs explanation. So, John.
Yeah, so to recap, the distributed generation model that OREP is really pushing for with renewables, we have a very centralized energy generation model. And the reason we have that in place is because that works great for fossil fuels. You have one very large power plant, be it nuclear, be it coal, be it natural gas. But if you just have one factory, you only have one place where you need to ship the coal. You only have one place where you need to pipe in the natural gas. You only have one place where you have to burn those fuels. You only have one site that you have to try to negate some of the negative health impacts that source might have. But you can consolidate your costs. From a corporate perspective, you can really cut down on your costs if you only have to have one construction crew build that power plant, if you only have to have one management team run that plant and operate that plant, one maintenance crew to maintain that plant. All those costs can be consolidated if you only have one power plant. And it works great for fossil fuels. But for renewables, it's not so easy. It's not like that. Renewables, you can't pipe in the wind to one central power plant. You can't pipe in the solar energy to one site. Solar energy is all over the state, even as we covered last time, even in Oregon. Even in cloudy Oregon, we still have more solar resource available than Germany, the world leader, has.
Even so, in Astoria.
Even Astoria. Least sunny spot in Oregon has more sun than Germany. So we have that resource all around, and therefore, we need to have generation all around. Small projects on the distributed level, you always have energy collection happening somewhere. So on a cloudy, partly cloudy day where you have clouds roll through a city, which happens once in a while here in Portland and elsewhere, if you have 100 projects set out across the Portland area, then maybe it's cloudy in northwest, but it's sunny in southeast. Maybe it's cloudy over here and sunny there. Or on the grander scale, on the state level scale, think about the wind. Maybe it's not so windy in the gorge, but it's always windy on the coast. Maybe it's windy in the high desert, but it's calm in the Willamette Valley. You always have energy input coming on somewhere. So that's kind of the distributed generation model that we really want to see and we really want to incentivize.
Yeah, and this is not to say I think anything big, you know, utility scale. We definitely need some utility scale projects.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there's more barriers right now to distributed generation, and that's what we want to tackle, is let's bring down these barriers so that people can get in on the action.
Yeah, those large scale utility level renewable energy projects, they've got the money behind them.
They do.
They've got the corporations who have figured out how to make those large scale wind farms work politically and financially. Yet it still comes down to the bare fact, and the fact of the matter is that the resource doesn't work like that, and you can't always depend on wind coming to one location. You need to have collectors all around. So
right.
Really, you should have a hybrid.
Yeah.
You know, the large utility scale projects have their place, but we need to have them balanced with these distributed generations. And that's one of the big critiques against renewables, is that the wind doesn't always blow, the sun doesn't always shine. So you need to have input coming somewhere, and you distribute your generation, and you won't have quite as big of a problem there.
Right. Balance is the key. So today's show, we're going to talk about incentives. We talked a lot about the background and the technology. Today, we're going to talk about paying for it, incentivizing distributed generation, incentivizing these small-scale projects that a person can get their hands around. And just a note, throughout this podcast and all our episodes, we'll be using a lot of examples from Oregon and Oregon's history and Oregon's policy, but we'll also be pulling in examples from all over the Northwest and all over the world.
Yep, and you can go to www.desireusa.org to find out more about the incentives in your area, not just in Oregon, but all around the country. Desireusa.org is DSIREUSA.org. A great website, breaks down the incentives available state by state. You can look at your state, and then you can see what's available in your utility area. Great website, great resource. We invite you to go to that website and learn more.
So today on the show, we're going to talk about incentives. How are we paying for this technology? How are we paying for distributed generation? How are we going to pay to get these smaller scale projects out there that individuals can get their hands on? We're going to cover tax credits, grants, and we're going to cover the most successful policy for renewable energy so far, which is a feed-in tariff. We're going to go into that in some detail because that's pretty important to understand.
We'll also cover what does Oregon have now, what's in place now and available right now if you're ready to move on a project and you want to know what's out there right now. We'll talk about that. The most common incentive policy for renewables that we see in the U.S. today is really tax credit. Tax credits come and go. You know, right now, the production tax credit is an incentive that was put in place when President Obama first took office back in early 2009. Did a great job at boosting the industry all around the country, especially in wind. And it basically gave a tax credit for every kilowatt hour, that's the unit of energy that we buy and sell from the grid, every kilowatt hour of generation. The companies that installed these projects got a tax credit for that production. So really great to support wind energy and renewable energy in the U.S., but it's set to sunset. It's set to expire at the end of 2012. It's yet to be seen what will happen there, but we will certainly be following that and keep you up to date. There was also the investment tax credit, a similar federal incentive that was available, more often used for smaller scale projects. And then here in Oregon, we had the BETCY, the BETC, the Business Energy Tax Credit. That was something that was available, gave you 50% of your project's cost could be regained in tax credits during the life of the system. So that was an incredible incentive that really put Oregon on the map and brought a lot of business here to Oregon, and that's when we saw so much growth in the industry here in this state. There was also the RETC, the Residential Energy Tax Credit, and that's still available in Oregon, and that gives homeowners, residential customers, tax credit for their project.
And is that as high as a 50% of a residential project?
No, it's capped at $6,000. Oh. So while, you know, residential energy projects are usually a little bit smaller, $6,000 isn't usually 50%. So it definitely was smaller. Of course, you also keep in mind that residents usually don't have the same tax appetite that some of these large corporations that are developing these big wind farms would have and would be able to take advantage of those tax credits. So a little bit smaller, and we'll talk about how you compare that with a grant later on as well. But some of the pros for tax credits. Let's first look at that. And the pros to tax credits, first and foremost, I think in today's political world, they're easily understood. We know about tax credits and politicians understand it, and thus they're easier to pass, I would say. It's simple to understand. Politicians vote to support a tax credit, and if you participate in the program, do what's asked of you, you don't have to pay the taxes that you normally would have had to pay. That's a tax credit. That makes sense. The last pro there would be that the country doesn't have any quote-unquote direct spending. The government doesn't have to pay out money for these projects. They're simply saying, hey, that income, that revenue that you're having and those taxes you're going to have to pay, why don't you hold on to that? You know, that's not always a pro. We're losing out on some very valuable tax revenue there for our general fund. And
so it's a pro for the company that doesn't have to give up the money,
right,
but it's a con for the government that doesn't get the money.
Exactly. So that's really kind of the first con of the tax credit. This is a loss of revenue for the government and a loss of money for that general fund. Also a con for the participant is that, I don't know about you, Andrew, but I don't have much of a tax code understanding.
Definitely not.
That usually takes several years, maybe even a couple degrees, to fully understand the tax code that this country has. But again, a large corporation, these larger companies that are taking part in these projects, they have the financial resources and the staff to find those loopholes and really take advantage of these tax credits. But to you and me, the normal average citizen, we don't really fully understand that.
And
we don't get to participate.
Right.
You know, another con against tax credits is that those of us with very little or maybe even no tax liability can't participate and can't partake of this tax credit program. If
right.
you're a school, if you're a community center, if you're a faith-based organization, a church, you can't get a tax credit because you don't pay taxes in the first place. So what good does a tax credit do for you? Also, if you're a farmer, sure, you pay taxes, but there's not much stability in how much you pay each year. What happens if you have a freeze in the middle of the spring and your crop is ruined and you don't end up having any revenue, you don't end up paying the taxes, and so you don't end up being able to take the tax credit. So really unstable, unreliable source of funding.
That's a pretty big one.
And what that ultimately means for a renewable energy project, the cost, the difficult part of a renewable energy project is that it's getting that upfront cost,
right,
getting that upfront capital,
the investment,
to buy the system, to buy the equipment. Once you have that system in place, more or less it's running there. You're getting zero cost fuel. You have maintenance costs, but you don't have to pay quite as much during the life of the system as you do upfront to install the system.
Right.
You look at fossil fuels, they have to build the upfront cost. Then they have to continue buying fuel throughout the life of the system.
And the fuel price is quite volatile, in fact.
Right, major problem. You know, natural gas has jumped from 14 cents to 2 cents to 5 cents all over the place.
Volatility.
You know, they just huge volatility in those energy costs.
Okay, so we've covered tax credits. What else do we have? You said something earlier about grants. I can get a grant for renewable energy.
So a grant for renewable energy are often available. Again, you can find the grants that are available in your area at desireusa.org. A big one in Oregon, we're lucky to have an organization in this state called the Energy Trust of Oregon. It's a nonprofit that works in the PGE's territory as well as Pacific Power's territory. They provide an upfront grant for renewable energy projects for residents.
Wow.
So, great system. It's available just about to all people within their zones as long as you meet their requirements. It's a great grant, and it pays you right up front. You know how much money you're going to get from them. Sometimes it's based on the production of your system. Sometimes it's based on the capacity of your system. but you know how much you're going to get. And oftentimes, ETO will just pass on that money. They pay it straight to the installer.
Great.
So you, the customer, you, the project owner, don't even have to hassle with that. It's a big chunk knocked off of your bill right up front.
And could I pair that with the renewable, the residential energy tax?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, the RETC in Oregon is available, and Energy Trust takes that into consideration and lets you pair the residential energy tax credit with their Energy Trust grant.
Okay.
and knock off some costs right up front. So great system. Most states aren't as lucky as we are here in Oregon to receive that kind of funding. But again, the tax credit is only available if you do have that tax liability. Pros of grants, as I said, you know how much you're going to get, and that money is paid straight to the contractor. The cons is sometimes the programs might dry up. Energy Trust has been successful in the past, but other grant programs, maybe if you are applying for one of those school programs or community center programs, grants are out there, but they're highly competitive. So not having the assurance that you're going to get a grant can be an issue.
Yeah.
Projects take quite a while to develop from conception to installation. When I worked with a wind turbine manufacturer, I mean, our projects, you know, from the time that a customer thinks, maybe I'll put up a wind turbine, I wonder how much wind I have,
right,
to the point of an actual installation, that can be 1 year, maybe even 2 years. You know,
wow.
You know, talk to your spouse, talk to your,
sure,
your tax guy, talk to your banker, figure it all out, talk to your manufacturer, survey some installers. A lot of steps there in between conception to installation. And by the time you're ready to install, those programs, maybe the grants dried up, maybe the tax credits expired, and you're stuck in a whole different place than where you started 18 months ago.
Yeah, that makes it hard to make that leap. So tell me, John, that there's something better than grants and tax credits. There's got to be something better out there.
Yeah, OREP has looked around the world, and I've seen incentive programs around the world, and by far the most successful energy policy in this world is what's called a feed-in tariff. Now, a feed-in tariff is a little bit scary of a term. You know, tariff scares Americans. Sounds like a tax, and that's not what it is. It's from, it's a German concept where it started. But it's just simply, it's a contract that you sign with the utility company where you are guaranteed that they will purchase all energy from your renewable energy system for a contract period of usually 20 years. You know how much you're going to get for it, and you sign a contract with them, and there's a stability and a reliability that's not in any of these other incentive programs.
Wow.
So let's first outline what a feed-in tariff is. I mentioned that it's a scary term. A feed-in tariff scares Americans.
Sure.
So some people were calling it a clean contract.
Okay.
In Oregon, where OREP is introducing a bill in the 2013 session, where it's the Clean Energy Economy Act. CLEAN is actually an acronym for Clean Local Energy Accessible Now. So that's where the clean comes from. But plain and simple, it sounds like a nice, neat name. It's a clean contract. And,
yeah,
it's simply that. The rule is, first, you are guaranteed to be able to interconnect to the grid so that you can produce electricity and push it back onto the grid if you don't use it right there at your home. Two, you get paid a fixed rate for every kilowatt hour that you produce. So a kilowatt hour, again, is the unit of energy that we buy and sell from the grid. So
okay,
for every unit that you produce, you get paid X amount from the utility. Three, you get that fixed rate for a fixed contract period. Again, usually it's 20 years, sometimes 15, sometimes 25, but 20-year contract period is pretty standard for a feed-in tariff clean contract program. And then four, you get to sell all your electricity for, back to the grid, not just enough to offset your own usage, but you get to sell all electricity your system produces and get paid for it.
So the feed-in tariff has been used in Germany. Tell us about the pros and cons of this. Obviously, they've had some success with this.
Right. You know, it's got a proven track record. You know, there's, 75% of solar in the world is installed because of feed-in tariffs. It's
wow.
Not just Germany. It's spread. Ontario and Canada has a great system. The UK right now has a great feed-in tariff program.
Yeah.
Even Mongolia, Saudi Arabia.
Wow.
The list goes on and on. It's not just the highly developed countries, but some of the developing countries are catching on to this now, and they're starting from ground zero and learning how to how to pick up development quickly, and they've copied this project. Well, and to talk about proven track records, the truth is there have been some failures out there.
Sure.
But there's experience with Finantero. So yeah. We can look around, we can see where it did work and where it didn't work, why it did work and why it didn't work. Mm-hmm. And we can learn from that and move forward. But, you know, the reason Finanteros have caught on and are so appealing in these countries is because they're fair and open to all, you know?
Yeah.
Do you have a choice as to where you buy your energy in the world right now?
Actually, no, I don't think I have any choice at all.
You have the utility company, the lines that come to your house, you buy electricity from that line. And we don't really have much of a choice there. So we want to open up the energy market so that it's not just the utilities who are generating, transmitting,
right,
and distributing electricity, but we want to take back the generation and allow all property owners, all homeowners, business owners, property owners to generate electricity and be able to sell it back. If you have a resource falling on your property, shouldn't you be able to make a product that's in high demand? Why not allow anybody that has that resource to provide that product?
And I think that's some of the reasons people buy property, is to have the resources that the property contains, whether it be lumber or water or oil, right? Like, but everyone's property has this resource of solar.
Sure.
And a lot of properties have this resource of wind.
And why are we not able to
yeah.
sell that product? If you bought a big farm and you had the land to grow corn, let's say, or we're in the Northwest, let's say you have room to grow some apple orchards,
yeah,
shouldn't you be able to grow your apples and sell your apples on the open market?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Why not do that for solar energy?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the idea, and that's what they've done in these other countries, is open it up to anybody can produce and sell electricity.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
So another pro to Finanteros is it's taking this renewable energy, and how often do we hear, well, can I install renewable energy? Sure. Well, what's the payback going to be?
Right.
When do I get my money back for
right.
this? First, I would ask you, what's the payback for your marble countertop? You know, what's your payback for that new car you just purchased? What's the payback for that nice radio you got? Why is renewable energy seen as something that has to pay you back? I mean, it does pay you back, and so it begs that question, how quick will it pay me back? Mm-hmm. And instead of thinking about, well, how quickly will I get paid back? Why not look at it in investor terms? What is the return on my investment here? What's the return on your investment of a normal product, of a car, of a marble countertop?
Sure.
No return on your investment there.
Right.
But you look at the calculations for renewable energy, and we won't go into the details because it really varies from an installation to an installation. It's a way for a business to have a new profit center, to have a new source of revenue coming into their business. If you have a big warehouse, you're not involved in renewable energy, but you're just making boxes and you've got a big warehouse. Well, you've got a big roof, and chances are it's got a lot of solar exposure. Why not put solar panels on that roof, and your box manufacturing company all of a sudden could get another additional $5,000 a month from their rooftop solar? And that's just more money that could hire a new person. You know, that's over the course of the year, that's $60,000.
Yeah.
That's a serious revenue for a company that before never thought about becoming energy producers.
Sure.
But why not? You've got the resource.
Right. We've all got the resource. And that's what's so exciting about this idea, is the idea of being an energy entrepreneur. You know, once you've installed the system, once you've found a way to pay for the system, you know, it just runs. And it's just passive income. It's the dream of a lot of Americans, myself included, passive income.
Yeah. So, you know, that begs the question, though, what's the con here, Andrew?
Right, it sounds great.
And, you know, the con is, and the realistic side is that it needs to get paid for, and it costs money. And what the way that feed-in tariffs are paid for is within the rate payers, and our rates will go up a little bit. But I remind you that our rates are going up no matter what. Every single year here in the Northwest, energy costs are rising anywhere from 3 to 7% a year, if not more. Costs are going up anyways and continue to go up. So OREP really advocates for investing in this upfront cost of installing renewable energy, clean energy infrastructure, so that in the long term, eventually these systems will have paid themselves off,
right,
and costs will plateau off. You know, we talked about last show, the hydro investment.
Yes,
here.
Yes, hydropower.
Hydro in the Northwest.
Yeah.
Where we installed dams and the infrastructure around hydropower back in the 20s and 30s. It was a high upfront cost then, but the planners in the day had the foresight to see that this is a readily available, abundant resource that we have in the Northwest, and those dams have enjoyed zero-cost fuel for decades. And likewise, we in the Northwest have some of the lowest energy costs in the country. And it's drawing business, right?
Definitely. It's attracted business. I mean, Google and Facebook have both located data centers here. The Silicon Forest, right? It helps these companies with lots of big appetite for power. Mm-hmm. They need cheap power. And I think if Oregon and the Northwest is going to be competitive for the rest of the century, we might just have to bite the bullet now and make the investment. That's something we should definitely support. So it sounds like the con you're telling me, John, is it will cost more money.
Yeah, surprise. Surprise. Don't know if you saw that one coming.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a free lunch. People keep telling me this, so yeah. I'm not too shocked.
You know, one thing with renewable energy, people want everything for free in renewables. They think renewable energy should be free. Well, like as we just said, no such thing as a free lunch.
Yeah.
Nothing's free. There's going to be maintenance costs. There's going to be upfront installation infrastructure costs.
Right.
It's going to cost us money, whether it's coming out of our taxpayer dollars or out of our ratepayer dollars. It's going to cost us money somewhere. No such thing as free.
The main difference I seem to see with renewables energy is it's moving us from an energy source, a power source that has some real drawbacks, to an energy and a power source that has fewer drawbacks.
Exactly.
So it seems like a natural evolution to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really feels like now is the time. We should really just start getting along.
Right.
In the process of being a more mature, civilization that uses the next best thing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a great point.
So let's talk about what does Oregon have now in the way of some policy or can you sell your electricity?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, to go back to, this is in Oregon. Washington has their own incentives and have some good incentives up there as well. But what Oregon has now, what most Oregonians who have renewable energy systems have done, is done something called net metering. Have you heard of this term?
I have heard of net metering.
Net metering is kind of a credit system where if we have a really, let's go with solar here, if we have a really sunny month and we generate 1,000 kilowatt hours with our solar array, but we only use 800 kilowatt hours, then that excess 200 gets pushed back onto our grid. The neighbors around us use that energy. But we, the customer, the owner of that project, our meter actually rolls backwards, or we receive a credit for that energy. So the next month, when we don't quite have as much production, we get that credit back. Next month, it's a little bit cloudier, it's not such good wind, if you have a wind turbine, whatever it might be, you don't have as much production, then that next month, you get that credit back from last month when you had 200 kilowatt hours in excess. Now you're 200 kilowatt hours short, and over the 2 months, you've evened out. But really, it's set up over a 12-month spread so that, here in the Northwest, you have lots of production in the summertime. That builds up credit, and in the cloudy winter, you get all that credit back.
So it sounds like kind of an even Steven, rolled over minutes type situation.
Exactly.
Well, that's better than not being able to sell to the grid, but it seems like it's not as attractive as a feed-in tariff.
Right, and the reason is because you have no incentive to produce more over the course of a year than you use in the course of a year.
I see.
And so, when working with installers, I've repeated it hundreds of times probably, you want to size the system for your property as close to your needs without going over. Mm-hmm. Because in Oregon, any excess at the end of 12 months is simply donated to a low-income assistance program. Great cause, I support that. But let's be honest, that's not the bottom line driver that's going to encourage people to maximize the cost effectiveness of their system, to maximize the production of their system, just to have a donation at the end of the year.
Right, and as our society gets bigger, grows, and more people move to the Northwest, and our energy appetites grow, that kind of incentive is not going to maximize our production of energy,
mm-hmm.
of renewable energy. And it sounds like a feed-in tariff would maximize our production of energy, because everyone's going to want to have as much resource collection as they can.
Yeah, right. And then, the way I see it in explaining it to the general public, let me throw two phrases at you, Andrew. Tell me which one's more appealing.
Okay.
You can save money, you can make money.
Ooh, that's tough, John. I'm going to have to think about that one. Make money. Make money.
We all want to make money. Saving money? Great. Let's save some money, too.
Sure.
Let's save money. Then let's make money. That's a lot more appealing.
That's better.
And that's the difference between a net metering policy and a feed-in tariff policy that pays you for your production. Every last kilowatt hour that you produce, you get paid for.
Wow. I'm sold.
Yeah. The other thing that Oregon has, aside from the net metering policy that's more popular and is more, has been around for a longer time, something that Oregon did in, come up with in 2009 legislation is actually a version of a feed-in tariff program.
Oh, okay.
So we do have what is called the Solar Pilot Program in Oregon. They call it a feed-in tariff, but it's not quite a feed-in tariff, and I'll tell you why. The Solar Pilot Program does pay you for production. It does pay you at a rate where you see a reasonable return on your investment in a reasonable period of time so that it's a good bottom line decision to invest. The catch is they don't pay you for all of your production. We at OREP like to call it net metering on steroids.
Okay.
You get paid, but only up to how much you consume.
Okay.
Any production over your consumption, again, it's just donated to low-income assistance program at the end of the year. So it's almost a perverse side effect is that you're actually incentivized to use more electricity. If you can somehow put up a very large system on your property, then you have to make sure that you use all of that electricity. Otherwise, you're not going to get paid for it. A funny story, a colleague of mine actually installed a system when she had a daughter living at home. That daughter graduated high school, went off to college, and thus her and her husband's power usage dropped drastically
with
the loss of a teenager.
Yeah.
So once that teenager left town, their use went down. Now all of a sudden the system that they had sized to produce as much energy as was used when it was the three of them in the household has now dropped a third. That loss of consumption has dropped her her payments from the Solar Pilot Program.
Her income should be better off turning on space heaters all the time.
Right. It might as well open up the windows and waste some electricity so that you could pay for those kilowatt hours.
It just seems like that's the wrong incentive.
That's not the way. We should be encouraging people not just to produce clean electricity, but to conserve their own usage and feed as much back onto the grid for their neighbors who don't have sunny roofs or who can't afford to install these systems or that don't install these systems.
Yeah.
We want to allow for as much production as possible and as much conservation as possible.
Agreed. So that's the Solar Pilot Program. Let's do some examples. Like, let's, you know, take me through a typical, like, a single family or a small car garage or maybe even also a larger system for a school.
Sure. So let's look at a typical residential project in Oregon. A typical two-car garage probably could fit a 3-kilowatt project. If you use a $5 a watt installation rate, which is pretty average here in Oregon, that means your 3-kilowatt project is going to cost you $15,000. $15,000, and with 3 kilowatts, you're going to generate about 3,000 kilowatt hours a year. So if you're getting paid in the last round of the Solar Pilot Program, customers were offered a little bit more than 40 cents a kilowatt hour for their production. So let's take 40 cents a kilowatt hour times that 3,000 kilowatt hours a year. That means you're going to have $1,200 a year coming back to you from the utility every year. That's pretty attractive.
That's significant.
Now, of course, remember that you had to take in a loan up front and a $15,000 loan to install this system. And let me note here, we're not taking into account here the tax credits that are available. The federal level, the Solar Pilot Program doesn't let you take the state tax credit, the RETC, but it does allow you to take the federal tax credit. And so you get 30% off of your project right off the get-go.
Wow.
But we're leaving that out for this discussion.
Okay.
So you've got a $15,000 installation. If you're making $1,200 a year in revenue, it's going to take you about 12 and a half years to pay off that loan.
Okay.
Again, assuming zero interest, you're going to have some interest on there. But
right.
We're just trying to simplify this for the purposes of this podcast. But about 12 and a half years to pay back. Then, the last 7.5 years of your contract life, you're just making $1,200 a year. That's pretty nice.
That's like, I mean, for me, when I was working in corporate, that would be the equivalent of like a raise, like a not a bad raise.
A raise, absolutely. I have a friend who just had a baby. If he took part in the Solar Pilot Program right now today, and at a project like we just outlined, you know, once that kid is in sixth grade, the project will be paid off. And then from sixth to 12th grade, they got $1,200 a year going into the college fund.
Wow.
So, young parents, hey, what a great investment to make today. Oh, by the way, it's also going to be a cleaner environment thanks to your investment.
Right.
But let's just leave that out of this.
Yeah.
This is just the economics. You're going to be making $1,200 a year from age 12 to 20 during that kid's lifetime. So that's attractive.
That is attractive.
Also think if you're 55 right now, maybe thinking about retirement around age 65.
Uh-huh. Yep.
What if you invest and in 12 years, when you're ready to retire, there's another $1,200 a year of revenue coming in.
And that's a contracted guaranteed income.
Contracted guaranteed and a reasonable return on your investment. So, you know, nobody's going to get filthy rich off of this. You know, some of that low-hanging fruit where we hear these stories about farmers getting $3,000 a month in lease payments from these wind turbine developing companies. You know, that isn't what we're talking about. We're just talking about a simple check every single month, $100 a month from the utility company. $100 a month, that could go a long way for a retired couple. That's groceries for a couple of weeks. That's maybe vacation fund money. Whatever you want to do, the point is it's your money. It was your wise investment in 2013, 2014, and come 2026, you've got that additional revenue stream.
It just requires us to think a little bit long term.
Yep.
That's really all it is.
Definitely. Let's look at kind of a larger scale project, because obviously that's a small scale. Let's think a little bit bigger. Think about your local school. Think about your local community center or maybe a church and a general roof, something that could hold a 60-kilowatt project. That's maybe a gymnasium roof, something like that.
Okay.
60 kilowatts, again, going with a $5 a watt installation rate, is going to cost you about $300,000. Assuming that you're going to get 40 cents a kilowatt hour, again, that was the rate last offered in the solar pilot program, that's a revenue of $24,000 a year. $24,000 a year for a school. Not too shabby there.
That's significant.
Again, that first 12 and a half years is going to go towards paying off that loan that they had to take. But then after year 12, they're going to have $24,000 in additional revenue going towards a part-time teacher, maybe a new librarian, maybe...
Books, technology, athletics, you name it.
Yeah, possibilities are endless. And imagine if you did something even bigger. Imagine if they were able to put up a wind turbine. Maybe it was a windy area, and they could put up a large turbine. You'd have lots more generation and lots more income coming back from it. Also, imagine if they want a grant to install the system. Maybe they didn't have to pay that full $300,000 up front.
Right.
Maybe they did find a pass-through partner to take that tax credit. Maybe they were able to find out another way to do this. You bring down that initial cost, and that just means you start getting that $24,000 a year even earlier.
Yeah.
But again, just a wise investment. You got to think about big picture. But we humans should be able to do that. That's what sets us apart from the rest of the animal kingdom, right?
Yeah, and I just keep thinking about this, especially not just for an individual, but for a school or a community center, like you're saying. It seems to me that this is an investment in, it's an asset, it's a physical asset, it's property, plant, and equipment.
Yeah.
I don't see what's bad about that.
And a banker could do the math for you and tell you the return on investment, and chances are this is going to be a lot better than what most people are spending their money on out there right now.
And certainly better than the stock market for the last 10 years.
Absolutely, definitely. Yeah. So, and then once you have that system, as you say, you have that asset, and it's not that after 20 years, your system's just going to stop operating.
It's going to explode on year 21, right?
Yeah, that's not going to happen. We're going to have continued generation. Yes, your efficiency will drop a little bit, but we see solar panels still operating 30, 40 years later, still generating kilowatt hours, and maybe come the year 2035, we'll have a new policy in place that offers an even lower rate for that electricity, but it's all plus at that point. You've already paid it off.
Pure profit.
And that's all income, and that's going to bring down the energy cost, just as the hydro investment brought down energy costs for us. Years later, decades later, thanks to that hydro investment, this early renewable energy investment will lead to lower and more stable energy costs for decades to come and for your kids and grandkids.
Yeah, and that, I don't see how that's not a good conservative perspective.
It's the most successful policy in the world.
So what's the catch? Okay. I mean, we've talked about these examples. It sounds great. I'm on board. What's the catch?
Right. Yeah, and we always got to come back to this because there's always a catch. And again, the catch is that we have to pay for it. Okay. Somebody has to pay for it. And there's arguments about taxpayers or ratepayers paying for it. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm both. I pay taxes I pay electric rates.
That's right.
So I don't really understand the difference there.
Yeah.
Why not put the cost on the ratepayers just as all energy infrastructure is paid for? If Pacific Power builds a new power line, our rates go up to pay for that power line. If they buy a new fleet of maintenance trucks, our utility rates go up. They go in front of the Public Utilities Commission. They explain that they have these increase of costs, and thus they have to raise the rates 3 to 5% every year is what's happening.
And that's how it's always been done.
It's always happening like that. The way a feed-in tariff is laid out is it actually puts 2 meters on your property. So one is your revenue stream that you're feeding out,
okay.
And one is what already is in place, you're buying electricity from the utility company.
Okay.
So it actually gives you two meters. The rate is spread out to all customers, those participating in the program and those who aren't generating electricity.
So then it would make sense if a feed-in tariff was passed for more people, it's actually incentive for more people to get in on this action of harvesting energy and selling it.
Exactly. Why just be a passerby when you can be an active, involved participant?
Again, I want to make money.
And that's what a feed-in tariff allows for. Even if you don't own property, even if you have trees all over your property so you don't have solar exposure, you could invest in a community project. A good feed-in tariff is designed so that it allows for communities to come together. 25 people or more can co-own a larger scale project, each chip in a little bit, maybe $2,000, maybe $10,000, build a project all together and share in the benefits. So it builds community, it brings people together to work together, and it really helps communities support one another. This concept was developed by conservative German farmers who together stood up and said, no utilities, we don't want to buy your dirty energy. We have this clean energy, we want to sell it to you. And guess what? They did it. They could do it, and we could do it here. We have that authority, we have that ability to regulate the utilities who really have a monopoly on us. And because of that, we have the Public Utilities Commission who's able to regulate them and tell them what they can do to a certain extent. So there's laws in place to protect them, the company,
right.
And we certainly need the utility companies. We need their distribution, and we need their transmission lines. And they can regulate that. And I haven't heard of any German utility companies going out of business.
Absolutely not.
They've just lost out on the generation.
Not all the generation, just some generation.
Just some of it. Great point.
We're just asking to be involved in the future of generation of power in our country, in our state. And I don't see why we should be denied that.
It's a simple, open energy market, free for all to participate. If you have the resource and you can create a product, you should be able to sell that on the free market.
I like open markets. I like free markets. Okay, so let's wrap up our episode here. What's next? Next episode, we're going to talk a little bit about the Oregon energy environment, the Oregon energy economy.
Yeah, and we've seen, in the last, certainly just in the last 4 years, a bit of peaks and lows and up and down. In 2008, 2009, there was a big boom. Then that kind of busted, and right now, towards the end of 2012 and early 2013, we're at the valley. So what comes next? But what has happened? How many companies came into Oregon in 2008, 2009, thinking this was going to stick around for a while? Now that business has dropped, they're beginning to leave, and we're going to discuss kind of the economic effects from this Oregon roller coaster that we've seen. So thank you so much for listening. Please feel free to look at OregonRenewables.com. That's OregonRenewables.com. That's OREP's website. You can find lots more details and resources on there. Feel free to click to donate, and we appreciate your support. Support the work that we do to make renewable energy accessible and readily available to all Oregonians. And let's have a cleaner and more successful economy in this state.
Absolutely. I'm going to go do that right now.
Thanks so much.
Okay, John. I'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
I'll be back.